clock, so let's get this show on the road. Call this meeting to order. Could we have a roll call, please?
Hugh Gibbons.
Here.
Bill Goggins.
Here.
David Hess.
Here.
Betsy Pringle.
Here.
James Nickel.
Here.
Elsie Weber. Rick Whitney.
Here. Next item is reading and approval of minutes.
Motion to dispense with the reading of the minutes.
Second.
Moved and seconded. All in favor?
Aye.
Okay. Motion carries. Any comments? Any proposed modifications to the minutes? Moved and seconded that we approve the minutes as presented. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Motion carries. Our agenda tonight is council member reports, possibly a work program review. There will be opportunity for the audience to speak after that. However, if your purpose is to speak on the single-family floor area regulations, then you will not want to speak in this first opportunity. You want to speak at the public hearing if you've come for that. But if you're not here to speak on floor area ratios regulations, then that's your chance to speak on any other topic. So after the audience participation, we'll have the hearing, and followed by any unfinished. Well, we'll possibly take action after taking that testimony in the hearing, and then we'll have a discussion of the 2006 comp plan amendments. And administrative report and community council discussion on emergency preparedness. That is our agenda for the evening. Council member reports and comments? Anybody?
I have one.
All right, Jim.
I would like to take this opportunity to thank the council for all their assistance during my short tenure on the commission or council.
Yeah.
And also thank the staff. They've been really helpful and helped me, I guess, assimilate myself into this position. And I guess I also especially have to thank Mr. Hugh Gibbons for all his extra time that he has given me in my education on this board. That's all.
We're going to miss you, Jim.
Yeah, we've enjoyed having you, Jim.
Actually, that does bring up the subject of replacing Jim, and
it didn't take long.
Yeah. we take care of business,
I guess.
You guys, I'm sure, got the emails suggesting that we may want to consider extending the period another week or two to see if we get more. Right now, we have two applications for the vacancy.
What is the deadline right now?
I think the deadline's up, isn't it? Yeah. And I frankly, you know, I was out of town up until yesterday, and I there was one person I know in particular who was very interested but didn't realize that there was a deadline and that he had to submit this application. So I, not that I'm saying he's any better or worse than this, but I'd like to, if there's people, he said, how's the average person supposed to know about this? And he just didn't see the notice in the paper. So if you guys would agree, and I would welcome everybody to do the same thing. Let's talk it up to anybody we know and get the best pool of applicants that we can, because we've got big shoes to fill. Is that so? Would there be any opposition to extending the deadline for applications till maybe what, another week from today or something? Would that work for you guys?
I think she'll have to.
Well, it would have to be noticed, and so it
probably 2 weeks.
Is that
yeah.
It?
Yeah.
With the holiday
it
and
takes
all. A week to get to notice it.
Okay.
Yeah. So.
Would that whatever the minimum time is for allowing for noticing? You guys okay with that?
Good idea.
Sure, I'm fine.
And with the understanding, let's all talk to anybody we know that may have been interested, because I think we all probably know people that have had an interest and maybe just didn't get their applications in. So. Paul, can you?
You want to touch base with Kathy? Do you want me to, or?
I'll go ahead and take care of it, and we'll extend it for the minimum time necessary, allowing for proper notice, and then we'll try to set up. We'll figure out what dates would work for interviews shortly after that. Does that work for everybody?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Is there anything on work program review, Paul, that you need
to discuss? I'd like to mention one thing that's on your calendar for the July meeting, and that would be a bundle of miscellaneous zoning code amendments, which we do occasionally to kind of keep the code current and codify interpretations and address some issues that come up from applicants or through builders and so forth. So we have quite a bundle. Mike is working on that packet, and the July 24th meeting would be a courtesy hearing prior to the Planning Commission meeting in August review that, and then they'll hold their public hearing as well.
Okay.
I'm sorry, yeah, Planning Commission is meeting July 13th as well. It's a study session, and then they'll hold their hearing in August. So this will be prior to your meeting will be prior to their hearing in August.
Okay. So this would be, are you saying that we'd be doing this at our July meeting then?
That's correct.
Okay.
And then don't we have another July meeting at the end of July?
Oh, yes, I should mention that too. You actually have, if I understand this correctly, one on July 31st and one on August 2nd for the Yarrow Bay office complex.
Right.
For the hearing on that, and then the deliberation. So I think that was clear to you all, if I recall. That was
mm-hmm.
Okay. Okay.
So the 24th, the 31st, and the 2nd?
That's what I have, yes.
Okay.
All right. Okay. So at this point, anybody from the office audience who would like to speak on any topic other than single-family floor area ratio regulations, this is your chance to address the council. Is there anyone who, okay, please come to the podium. And
just a question. What qualifications are you looking for in the replacement on the community council?
Yeah,
Mr.
There's no specific qualifications other than being a resident of the Houghton boundaries.
You have to be a registered voter. What do you know the qualifications for?
Well, I assume you have to be, but I don't recall that, to be honest.
Well, you have to be eligible to be. If you're not a registered voter, you couldn't run for election, could you?
Well, at the next election, yeah, but I'm not sure about the appointment part of it, but that makes sense. But we can check on that. But
yeah.
Clearly, they had to live within the Houghton jurisdiction.
Right.
So it's not an election.
This is an appointment. That's correct. Yeah, Jim's leaving us, so you would be serving the balance of his term, and then you'd have to be up for election with the rest of us the next time that the council is elected.
Excuse me, if we're going to have this,
actually,
we need to have somebody at the...
Very good point, Paul. When we have this, you're supposed to go to the podium, identify yourself, and...
I'm Jennifer Linden, and I do live in Houghton.
Okay, address?
10522 Northeast 48th.
Thank you, Jennifer.
And the term is how long?
It's a four-year term, but how much is remaining? Another 3 years of your term?
3.5 years.
Okay.
And the Corrections Department has been trying to, well, they did make a statement that the person appointed would have to run at the next general election.
Oh, okay.
So it might not be a full 3 years.
All right.
Oh, yeah. That's typically true of a city council, too. You know, they have to run in the next general election.
Which so November this year?
This November?
No, not this November. It'd be the following. There's no city council election this year.
Oh, okay.
So the next time there's a city council election, you'd have to run for...
We can check on that, too. That's a good point.
Thank you.
All right.
Thank you.
All right. Then the next... we have another...
My name is Myron Richards. I live at 6555 102nd Avenue Northeast, and I served on the Houghton Community Council and Houghton City Council before we were joined together for a total of 10 years, and I want to thank you people for putting in the time. Sometimes you have to sit here and listen to a lot of things that you would rather not have to hear. My question is about the tree ordinance, and I don't know what input you people on the council had into that document. Let me give some of my concerns. I was concerned when I read that someone was fined $6,000 for cutting down cottonwood trees. Cottonwood trees are a nuisance. I nearly die every spring from the cottonwood trees, and I think the person who cut those down should have a medal. And also, when I moved into my house in 1954, there was one little spindly maple tree in the yard which had to go after we had did a remodel. And all the trees that are in my yard now, and there are six or seven major trees, I planted myself. And some of them are really unsafe at this point and need to be taken down. And in looking at the ordinance, it looks like I have to replace those trees with something else. I don't want to replace them with something else. And also, before my time runs out, when I first moved to that property, we had a 180-degree view of Lake Washington, unobstructed. Now we have zip, zero, mostly because of trees that the city of Kirkland planted on Lakefield Drive. Thank you.
I would comment, Myron, that there was a lot of debate. We did have something to say about it, but and it wasn't unanimous, but we did approve the ordinance with some reservations. And to get more information, I think you may be a little mistaken on removing trees. You can remove trees up to a certain number without having to replace them.
And the website and
yeah, it can be a little confusing. You just probably want to talk to Paul or somebody in the planning department, yeah, and they can give you specific guidance on your situation. And it may not be quite as bad as you think. But we do share some of your concerns. Any other general comments from the audience? Okay. Then we go into the hearing on single-family floor area ratio regulations. The way that we normally proceed with this is we allow staff to make a brief presentation. I was wanting to talk to Michael beforehand to set some sort of limits on how much time we'd spend on that. I guess I have a question for those of you in the audience. Is there anyone in the audience who has not had the opportunity to receive the information that staff has prepared, either orally or through the packets that are available on the floor area regulations? Is there anyone who has not had that chance? Then what I'm going to ask is that we dispense with a staff report and just go to getting the public information. That's really what we're here for. If they've already gotten the information, there's no point in duplicating that.
Is it possible? Well, I have just some clarifications that I need.
We could do that either before or after. What's the council's preference? You want to get clarifications after we get the public testimony or before?
I would suggest if you have questions at the outset, go ahead and ask them. You can always ask more after public testimony if you want. But
let's go ahead that way, then. Go ahead.
Okay. And forgive me
I do have one thought on that. In the interest of the time of the people in the audience, if we could ask the questions either before or after, why don't we allow them to submit their testimony, and then they can choose whether they want to wait around and hear our questions. Do you think that's fair? Because you're going to get to ask the questions either way, Betsy. Or do you think that might influence their comments? Is that what you're thinking?
Well, it could. I mean, it's just some questions that came to my mind while I was reading this packet, and I don't know if it came to anybody else. But, I mean, it's not like lengthy questions.
Typically, we have a staff presentation, then we have clarifying questions, but no discussion until the public testimony, and then you have your discussion. But it's open to the community council how they want to proceed.
I mean, I can wait.
I'm only thinking that if I'm a member of the public and I come here, I want to testify, that I might rather say my piece and leave, and then they can get our questions afterwards. You know,
okay.
I'm only thinking if it's public hearing, give them their chance first, if
okay.
That's okay.
Sure.
If it bothers you, then
no.
Okay. All right. So do we have a sign-up sheet for public testimony?
We do.
So if any of you want to speak who haven't signed up, please go up to the sign-up sheet, and let's begin the process with whoever was first to sign up. Please come up and identify yourself, your address, and tell us what you think about this.
Do you taste that water? Does it taste sweet to you?
No.
Not really. No, chewing gum, sorry.
Can we get started? who's first on the sign-up sheet?
Good evening. Elizabeth Wangey, 5618 104th Avenue Northeast, Houghton. I wish that was still the address. Dear Council and City, I began attending the FAR meetings with no opinion at all. I just wanted to learn about the issue as it affects where I live and where I work. The more I listened at these meetings, the more it became apparent that there is no defined, clear issue. It was almost a circus in here at several meetings because it seemed that the panel wasn't real clear on what the issues were, and people in the audience had opinions mostly for no change to the FARs. Apparently, some folks in Kirkland who oppose changing the old homes with the new homes, yet these folks have not come to these meetings. It seems to me that the city of Kirkland is spending a lot of time and money to appease these folks who don't come. If they were so concerned, where are they for these meetings? There have been more folks here that oppose the new FAR than that are against it. What does that tell the city? I have a neighbor with a new home that is not a big home. It is small, and it is ugly, but not in their eyes. Is it my right as a citizen to object to their style of home? Does the right of a landowner become compromised just because someone doesn't agree with what they want to do with it? Do just a few make the decision for the majority? The city already has setbacks and height restrictions that determine what can be built on a lot. That should be enough. Is the city going to allow a few citizens to tell what color the houses should be because they don't like the new colors that are out? Where are the folks who oppose change? Since we are spending so much of our city's money to study this, I think we should see for ourselves how many there are that are opposing change and what their exact comments are. These complaints should be made public. I think it is time to put this issue on the back burner. With no clear problem, there is no clear resolution. At the very least, don't rush through something that affects so many and at such costs. At the last city meeting I was here, they wanted to see photos. I took just a few today, and so along with my letter, I'd like to give you that as well.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Next.
Jennifer Linden again. I wish to comment on the proposed changes. I'm in favor of more restrictive requirements. In fact, I wish that more limitations would be considered. I'm horrified at some of the houses that have been and are being built in Kirkland, mostly because of their massive size. So I consider that the proposals that have been put forth are baby steps in the right direction. One of those is counting vaulted spaces twice in the square footage calculation. It seems like that should reduce some of the volume in homes that are being built. The proposal recommended was to allow 16 feet before counting that floor space twice, and I would support allowing a lower ceiling before counting the space twice. And I saw in the packet that one of the other communities does that. I think that the accessory units, or at least a substantial portion of that square footage, should count also towards the allowable square footage. And the distance that architectural features can protrude into setbacks should be reduced. Some other regulations to consider might include a formula for maximum volume of a house, which one of the architects recommended at the last meeting. I would say a prohibition on flat roofs. So many houses are having flat roofs, obviously, to go to the maximum height with the maximum volume allowed. And I think they look horrible and are not appropriate for this rainy climate. I would go for an increase in setbacks, particularly the side ones, and some kind of view protection for existing houses around. I think that the role of a city government is to set regulations for the common good. Sadly, that's not the motivation for some builders and homeowners. It's for the common good that there is enough unbuilt space on a lot for the sake of the environment, land for rainwater to soak in, for plants, including big trees, to grow, helping improve air quality, climate, bird habitat, wildlife habitat. when houses are built close together, there's not enough room for significant trees and plantings. A builder who erects a house to the maximum allowable size gains a benefit when the next door house has more room for mature planting. I think that builder should be required to leave enough space on the new house's lot for such plantings, too. The fact that many lots, and it's certainly true in Houghton, are being subdivided has a huge impact on the loss of trees and land to soak up rain. I've seen many a lot in the area previously wooded or perhaps had one smallish house be cleared and have numerous big houses built with just token landscaping. I read in the paper that Kirkland wishes to increase its tree coverage from 32% to 40%. That's certainly not going to happen the way things are going. I'd like to see smaller houses occupying less of a footprint on each subdivided lot. I understand that some of the homes in Kirkland are of an age and condition such that they need to be replaced. I'd like to see them replaced, if that's the decision made, with houses of an appropriate scale to their lots. And I do not believe the argument that there's no market for smaller houses. There are many baby boomers and empty nesters who wish to downsize, as well as people without children, and families who choose to have a smaller impact on the planet. I recommend a book by Sarah Susanka, The Not So Big House, and she has a whole series of books that are excellent, describing, giving many examples and pictures of features that make a house a home for families of assorted sizes. An argument that I heard that more restrictive regulations will lower the value of properties, I don't believe that holds merit. Carmel, California, Santa Fe, New Mexico, properties there are very highly valued, more so because of the value placed on aesthetic considerations that are part of the regulations, including in Santa Fe, they do actually limit paint colors. If regulations serve to make the whole community a more beautiful area, then the property values are enhanced. I'm concerned about copying what Bellevue and Redmond or other communities do nearby and say let Kirkland forge its way to being a leader in livable rather than overbuilt residential neighborhood design. Thank you.
Thank you, Jennifer. Next.
I think we should make a clarification that everybody knows. We don't have the floor area regulations do not cover the Houghton area. We vetoed that ordinance when it came through to us. So it affects all of the city except for Houghton. So we're only listening to this tonight because city wants to see if we want to change our mind maybe or make comments to influence this new ordinance, new regulation. So currently floor area ratios do not affect the Houghton area. It's open for consideration.
Next.
Hi, my name is Dana Adams. I live at 11016 Northeast 65th Street in Kirkland. Currently a resident of Houghton and live near the International School. I'm coming tonight out of my busy life, like everybody here, but I feel like I wear many hats in this community. My family moved here when I was 9, and I attended Peter Kirk Elementary, Kirkland Junior High School, and grew to consider Kirkland to be my home. I come here this evening primarily wearing the hat of a mother of 4 boys and choosing a home that was constructed that I felt was of a size that we desired to live in. And I'm thankful that Houghton vetoed the FAR. I'm not in support of any changes, and I wish that the entire city of Kirkland would follow your suit in simply keeping the building envelope as it is that is already restrictive. I think that each person comes with a different set of values, and I can honor and appreciate those who wish to live in a smaller home and consider that something that they want to pass on to their children or something they really, truly value. In my case, I am a working mother, like I said, with 4 boys, trying to accommodate a nanny. And as far as, you know, volume goes in a house, it's one of the things I love in my house because with the climate that we have here, we can't always be outside. And for me to walk into a home that's open and airy, you know, I really appreciate that space. And then the third hat that I come wearing is a local real estate agent. I belong to the Windermere Downtown Kirkland office, and I do work with many of the builders here in Kirkland, the majority of which I really think are trying to do the right thing. And I am one of those voices for the potential market for smaller homes on traditional size lots or even smaller size lots. And so far, I've been unsuccessful in convincing any of them that that's the way to build a house, and that's primarily driven by the cost, the land value. And when their competition is building larger homes, which are highly desirable right now, and it's truly, I think, a market-driven phenomenon that we're experiencing, these larger homes, it's really hard to convince them to go out on a limb to build a 2,500 square foot home with a two-car garage in the downtown core when that buyer could go buy something that's larger for an equivalent price. So I really come here urging you to leave things as they are. I think Houghton is a really beautiful place to live, and as far as many of the markets that I work in, has a very strong value, and as far as a community, I think people really look to its strengths, and I think it's a beautiful neighborhood, from big houses to small. So I don't think this is for the council to be deciding how they're going to monitor what is a beautiful home to be built, because people may have contemporary tastes versus a more traditional, and it's like beauty is in the eye of the beholder. So I just say let that be. Thank you.
Thank you, Dana.
Thank you.
Next on the agenda, or next on the list.
Hi, my name is Laura Hine, and I live at 4725 108th Avenue Northeast in Houghton. And I'd rather not really address specific issues and concerns that I have with the FAR and whether or not Houghton specifically adopts it, but I think that it's really important to focus on the process. And instead of reacting to FAR as a problem or a specific issue in isolation, I think this is an opportunity for the Houghton community to consider what exactly it is that we value as a community, as a part of Kirkland, and also as an independent community. Considering first the desired and desirable future, and then making decisions that will support that future rather than just coming in and piecemeal trying to address a specific regulation. There's a lot more to a neighborhood than square footage of houses. And there are also a lot of attributes to property that are more valuable than just the sales price. Property offers a lot of things such as shelter, security, family traditions, community connections, nourishment, nature, access to businesses, all sorts of things. And considering what we really value may help us discover what we need to do to live with those values. Kirkland as a whole and Houghton as a particular part of Kirkland are right now very desirable places to live as they are. And I hope that in the process of considering whether FAR happens or not, we not lose what we all came here for or have come to love being here. I doubt that people who built and bought most of the homes currently here chose Houghton because they hope to make a bundle of money by selling their house someday. The people I know who have been here for many years, and also those who are currently buying or have recently bought or hope to buy, if they can afford it, a place in Houghton, are looking for a comfortable and secure home in a pleasant community. They enjoy the walkability of the community. They enjoy the front yards, the gardens, the access to parks and businesses, and all of those attributes. And those who want huge are looking for places to get bigger for less money and don't really care as much about driving as far as they need to do to get there. So I wonder if we want to see our community primarily as homes for people to live in or as an investment opportunity for people to make money out of. Builders say that Kirkland is already too restrictive, and I don't want to live in any of the less restrictive communities that they are welcome to build in. So if our restrictions are too great, there's lots of other places to go to build. Builders also say that it's some builders I've heard say that the little old homes are the ones that destroy the values. And I'm wondering what they mean by values. As someone who finally managed to catch one of those little older houses before it was torn down, I will soon be modifying that home to be a little more attractive and more livable than it is now, and retain the amount of garden space that I bought it for, with greater energy efficiency and adding to the tree canopy instead of subtracting from it. Because I live in Houghton, I am able to drive my car less, so I don't add to greenhouse gases and contributed pollution. And I hope that improving air quality and reducing greenhouse gases is a value that we all care about. I've heard somewhere that Kirkland as a whole is looking towards some greening and Kyoto Accords consideration and that sort of thing, and I don't think that putting the far cart before that horse is a good idea. I've heard about the question, what about nest eggs? And I'm wondering, what about nests? How many people who have lived here most of their lives will be able to stay when their taxes get driven up by the massive empty space mansions that are robbing neighbors of their views, of privacy, of bird nesting habitat, and of precious winter sunlight? Restrictions, FAR or others, are the necessary agreements we make with each other when we come together in community and live in close proximity to each other. Whatever restrictions we choose, we need to choose what works for us to improve our lives as a whole, not just our bank accounts. Nor should our homes and quality of life be sacrificed so someone else can make a profit at our expense. As for what the market demands, I see a greater demand for increasingly unavailable, compact, economical, and convenient homes, while the big mansions go begging for buyers. There are several that have been built right in my neighborhood. They've been on the market for as much as a year. They still don't have buyers, and yet to try to find a home that's less than 1,000 or 1,200 or 1,600 square feet in this community at an affordable price is almost impossible. So let's consider what we really want our community to be before we make piecemeal decisions on this or other regulations. At the same time, let's not wait so long that we lose the greater values of our community because they've been snatched away because we didn't have FAR and somebody came and took advantage of the opportunity to make a buck and deprive us of that value that we might want to hang on to. Thank you.
Thank you, Laura. Next.
My name is Donald Winters, and I live at 417 6th Avenue South in Kirkland. Some of the things about the floor area ratio sound okay, but I am particularly opposed to the portion of it that reduces the ratio from 60 to 50% in 5,000 square foot lot areas. Because as the Planning Department explained in their presentation at the Planning Commission meeting a few weeks ago, the trend in floor area ratios is a higher ratio for smaller lots and a lower ratio for larger lots, which kind of makes sense because you can't build a normal, what would be considered a normal size house on a 5,000 square foot lot if the ratio went below 50%. So you would be kind of reducing these lots, and there are a pretty large number of them in this area in Houghton that would be reduced from 60 to 50%, and that would reduce the maximum size of the house from 3,000 square feet to 2,500 square feet, and that includes a garage, which you normally do not include when you're talking about the size of a house. So if you took out about 400 square feet for the average size of garage, you're talking about a maximum size house at 2,100 square feet that they would be able to build. So that is considerably less than what is considered normal house in today's real estate market. It's a small house compared with most new houses today. So I think the existing ratios, the way they are in effect, makes sense to have a higher ratio on a smaller lot. So, and I do think it will affect the value of these lots. And a lot of 5,000 square foot lots in Kirkland now have old houses. And in fact, probably shouldn't say this, but there are some obvious tear down houses with people who have been living in them for many years who will really lose a lot of value if the lot is restricted in that way. The maximum size is reduced, especially on the 5,000 square foot lots, because the house, the possible house, would be so small. In fact, I talked to a developer who said the value of a lot, 5,000 square foot lot, would be reduced by about $50,000 if the FAR regulation went into effect, reducing it the ratio from 60 to 50%. So that part of the floor area ratio I'm opposed to. Thank you.
Thank you, Donna. Next. Everyone who had a desire to speak is either.
I'll sign in afterwards. My name's Mike Nickram, and I live at 101 10th Avenue. And I'd like to share some information. I'll try and make it as accurate as I possibly can. Having watched the floor area ratio go through its process, not only in this city and other cities, I would like to present some factual information to the council, and hopefully you can use it in determining your decision tonight as to whether or not to move backwards to accepting this new floor area ratio or moving ahead and maintaining the livability in Houghton. One of the issues I'd like to address is the during the last public hearing, I guess the only other public hearing on this issue, this council chamber was completely full of people. And at one point during a hearing, an individual asked for a show of hands of how many people supported the new FARs. Only 8 people raised their hands. When asked how many people did not support the new FARs, the whole rest of the audience, which was standing room only, raised their hands. Now, the chair of the Planning Commission at that time expressed her dismay because of the fact of Lake Washington graduation was going on the same night, and suggested that perhaps not enough proponents of the new FAR regulations showed up because their children were attending high school graduation. Of course, that proposes the fact that the rest of us don't have children and don't have children attending graduation. Well, I want to inform everybody real clearly there's no graduation ceremonies going on tonight, and we're not exactly overwhelmed by a lot of people here out of 45,000 people who live in the city who are advocating these new FAR regulations. So I want to make that real clear right now. There's barely 2 handfuls of individuals that I've been able to count that support these new FARs. We have 45,000 other people to think of. We also have our children to think of coming to this area. Now, as we all are aware here, the state of Washington has something called the Growth Management Act, which mandates density over sprawl. No other state in our nation has adopted any similar regulations in the last 16 years. We're all by ourselves on that, and the state of Oregon virtually threw it out this last year, their version of growth management. At the same time, the city of Kirkland has woefully fallen short of its population goals, mandated under, well, not mandated, but goals that are set by this very city as far as what we can achieve. Now, the first 10 years of GMA, we were on target for some 500 citizens a year. The last 5 years under GMA, the city doesn't even hit 25% of its goals. Now, as we look into a floor area ratio issue, how is that going to help us increase that opportunity to achieve our goals? Let me give you a case in point. Dr. Tom Green and his wife Jane. They moved from a home in the Saybrook community out in Winneville. It's one of those 4,000 square foot homes with a 4-car garage I visited on an acre and a quarter lot that we used to plat right and left back in the 80s and previous. They moved on to a 5,000 square foot lot up on Kirkland Avenue, not in Houghton. We built a 3,000 square foot home for them. That included their garage, of course. As one has to remember, the floor area ratios include above grade garage and above grade basement space, leaving about a 2,200 square foot home for 3 bedrooms. That's considered too big. Now, within our current regulations, we're allowed to put front porches and architectural elements into the front yard setbacks. You would lose that under these new proposed regulations. Under the current regulations, we also don't include decks and vaulted space. You'll lose the airiness and the roominess of homes under new regulations. You would lose the front porches under new regulations. Tom and Jane wouldn't have been able to move here. They would not have moved here. They would continue to commute from Woodinville, where Tom works as a physician at Evergreen Hospital. He would have maintained his extra distance commute for him to be able to get to his patients. And right now, because of the debilitating disease that his wife has, we would not have been able to put an elevator in this home, because as we are densifying, the homes are getting more vertical, and so we're doing handicap accessibility, which took out about 150 square feet in their home, so we could put an elevator on all three floors. Now, that's one example. I could share with you another dozen examples of homes I built, both in Kirkland and Houghton, very, very similar situations.
So but you're not going to tonight, Mike.
Unless you want to give me another 20
because,
minutes, right?
No, you've got...
I'll watch my clock.
Wrap it up. You've done 5 minutes. We'll give you 1 minute to wrap it up.
Do I get my time that you interrupt me here, Mr. Whitney? Because what I want to point out is, and for the facts I've given you, is that I'm just hoping you can digest that in your decision-making process of whether or not to adopt restrictive codes against housing, and whether that's going to help or hurt the population goals that we're required to meet in the state of Washington. Thank you.
Thank you, Mike. Is there anyone else who would like an opportunity to speak before we close the hearing? Okay, hearing none. Now it's our turn. Betsy, you want to start asking your questions?
Well, Mike just brought up a new question, and that's about the GMA goals. I thought we were meeting our GMA goals just fine, especially with the downtown development.
I think we're close on the targets in terms of households, but we're seeing smaller household people per household, which means our population isn't growing as fast as we would like or thought. So it's really two parts to that. One are household targets, and the one are population. And the way the Conaway planning policies are set up, they're based on dwelling units or households. So we in the past a couple of years, we've actually got up to our per household per year kind of average. For a while, we were running short, as Mike alluded to, but now we're starting to see a bump up on that.
Okay. One of the questions I had about the RS 5.0 lots with the FAR of 60%. A person can build, can buy two lots next to each other and build a 6,000 foot house on that. Okay.
Assuming each lot is minimum 5,000
yeah.
square feet.
One of the things that I've drawn so many pictures trying to fit this stuff in. I'm still a little confused on the 60% FAR and the 50% lot coverage.
Okay.
How does
there,
that?
There are two different things. They're measured separately, just like setbacks and height and all that are. The lot coverage has to do with how much of your property can be covered with impervious surface. So, you know, roofs, driveways, walkways, regardless of what size, how many square feet the house contains in multiple floors. So you have to meet the 50% lot coverage limitation. And so that's one set of measurements. And you look at a plan and plan view, like you're looking down on it from an airplane, and measure around the exterior of all these perimeter or these impervious areas and divide that into the lot area. The FAR has to do with how many square feet are contained in the house in the manner that it's measured under the code. So it's possible to have, let's take a 2,000 square foot home, for example. You could have 2,000 square feet on one floor, right, a Rambler style, or you could have it on two floors or three floors, but you're counting the actual square feet, you know, times the number of floors that it's over, which is a totally independent measurement from lot coverage.
Well, that's the way I understood it, but that doesn't seem to be what I'm seeing. What I'm perceiving, and this is where I'm having some problems with all of this, is what I'm seeing is houses that seem to be built all the way out to their setbacks, and I don't understand how that can be only a 50% lot coverage.
Yeah, and it's it might be included in your in the public comment section of your packet. Somebody did submit a graphic of a typical 7,200 square foot lot, and if you just measure the setbacks around it, there's what 40% or more of the lot is included in the setback. So it doesn't take much more open space beyond the setbacks to get to the 50 assuming they're not penetrated by driveways and all that. So it can, I think you can have a house.
But they would be penetrated by driveways. I mean,
at least one of them would. I mean, yeah. You have to get onto the property, obviously. But even with that, it doesn't take too much additional yard space to get you up to a 50% pervious area. And it can, I mean, you're looking at the building three-dimensionally. It's this big, you know, tall mass where the open space is flat and kind of three-dimensional. So it's going to be visually skewed.
Yeah. And where did that 50% number come on lot coverage? Is that, was that? I guess I'm wondering is...
Why 50? I mean, why was that number?
Yeah, I mean, do we need to maybe look at that when we're looking at these things? Is it the size of the house or is it the how much of the
lot? I don't
lot
know
the
history
is?
Of it. I know that years ago, Kirkland only regulated the lot coverage by building, which is typical of how a lot of communities do without getting in a total impervious surface area. But some years ago, they changed to impervious surface rather than lot coverage by building, and some cities do both. But Paul may know a little more about the history.
It's been there for, you know, probably decades.
Well, I know that. I was just wondering if there was a magic reason for that number that had to do with groundwater.
At some point they looked at that and came up with an educated, you know, guess at that point. We've come a long way since then, and we're starting to get questions on that from our stormwater people, but it's really been around Kirkland for so many years, it'd be hard to... I mean, it's not impossible, but it'd be very difficult to go back and readdress that. Although there may be ways to do that through incentives and so forth, but that's kind of somewhat of a separate question. It's related, but it's somewhat of a separate
question. Okay. That's
same thing with setbacks. And we're finding people are actually, they're billing out to their max, the setbacks. They're filling up that envelope where they didn't used to because of land values and desires that people are actually billing, you know, through the entire footprint of their setbacks.
Yeah.
But they didn't used to do that.
If I could make a clarification on one of the last comments that was made by the last speaker, under any of these options that we've looked at, the possibility of extending your front porch into the setback would not be affected. That's covered by a different section of the code than the section that covers bay windows and chimney enclosures and that sort of thing. So that provision nobody's talked about changing.
Yeah, we knew that.
Okay. Just wanted to make sure.
Yeah.
Any more questions, Betsy? Or
I think that's probably my main. What's my? That's my main question.
Anybody else have questions of staff before we begin discussion of?
I could have one. What's the derivation of the 16 foot for the vaulted ceilings?
Space. Yeah.
What does that do for us?
The intent of that is right now any vaulted space is counted once for an FAR, no matter how tall it is. And there's a realization that the vaulted space obviously adds volume to a building of some degree. So that was one of the pieces of the FAR regulations that we were asked to look at by the City Council. Well, if you're going to look at that and do something different, the different thing to do would be to count that twice or three times and choose a break point where you would begin to count it multiple times. We looked at some other regulations of other communities. A couple of them had addressed that issue. The one I can think of offhand said that once it reaches 12 feet high, we count it twice. Once it reaches, I think it's 26 feet or something like that, we count it three times in a community that has higher, you know, height limits, height allowances. The 16 feet, it's not a magic number, but it the thinking behind that was that at least at one time, a standard ceiling height was 8 feet, and we know that played around a lot. You know, it went to 7.6 for a couple decades, and then it's gone to 9 or 10 now for contemporary homes. But if you had an 8-foot ceiling twice, that 16 with framing between it that adds close to another foot, it's up near 17. So we thought 16 would be just shy of getting a full 2 stories under that scenario. So that's just the rationale behind that number.
Wouldn't it be more
look
fair?
At a different one.
Wouldn't it be more fair to count the vaulted space based on how many floors you had in the rest of the building? If you've got a two-story building, why shouldn't the vaulted space be penalized?
Well, oftentimes it's under a pitched roof, or it might have a sloped ceiling. So you may have a full two stories, and next to it's a vault that's tapering down. And if you were to take an imaginary extension of that intervening floor, by the time you hit the outside wall, you might have, you know, 4 foot height. Certainly you can do it that way, but...
This was one of the things that bothered me in the first go-round when we were looking at the vaulted spaces. There's no penalty for vaulted spaces.
Right.
And it seemed like what we were after is to control the bulk and mass.
Well, that's right,
vaulted spaces, you're not controlling bulk and mass.
Yeah, there are, I guess, the countering argument, and I'm not saying this is mine, but this is one that I've heard a number of times, is that often you can capture space and end up with a vaulted ceiling without really affecting the roof line, because you might use a different truss system. You might use a scissor truss as opposed to a more conventional truss where you have a flat ceiling with attic space above it, but now suddenly, since you've gone to a different truss system, you've managed to get a pitched interior roof form without affecting the outside form. So this proposal is trying to do something to accommodate that reality, but also address the fact that vaulted spaces often do contribute to increased mass, which is what we are trying to control here. So it's seen as kind of a middle ground, I guess.
Okay.
On that subject, Michael, how is that 16-foot calculated? Like, say you've got a sloping...
Yeah, we would calculate it similar to how we calculate attic space, where you draw a straight line up, and where that line hits 16 feet from that point up would be counted additionally. But from that point lower, it would not be counted twice.
Okay.
So the midpoint, you know, maybe 14 or something, and you may have 14 below.
So anything beyond that, where it reaches 16
where
foot,
reaches
anything
16
beyond that, that starts counting as additional floor space.
Right.
I see. And rather than the average or some other.
Average and calculate.
Okay, that's fair.
Surface area.
What about, there was a comment by one of the speakers on that an architect had said, why not just base it on setting a maximum volume?
Yeah, and that's been suggested a number of times, and I think it's a real intriguing approach. It's an entirely different approach. It's another avenue toward addressing, you know, house size. It's not what the city council has asked us to look at, and I think to do that would really mean getting back into work program and budgeting and saying, is this a priority? A downside to that is that who knows if you pick the right number again, just like FAR. You know, you start out with certain numbers and certain ways to measure it, and does it work? Well, you don't know until you use it for a while, and you could choose a volume calculation. The upside of the volume approach is that if you're just measuring external surface area, it's a pretty clear calculation.
Mm-hmm.
Whether it's right or not, you know, going in, who knows, but... That's a deeper analysis than we've been asked to go into.
And that's not something that you've seen employed successfully in any other cities, and it's proven the test of time, or it's
yeah,
worked
in fact,
well?
We looked at that, and we found one jurisdiction that considered it back in a suburb of Chicago and didn't adopt it. But they at least had some formula there. But it's kind of a new idea. I mean, it's relatively untested, but it does, as Michael said, may have some merit, you know, at some point. But again, you have to figure out what is that point, and how do you come up with that standard,
okay.
And how do you measure it? So anyway.
Any other questions? I've got a couple. These lots that are the 5,000 zoned lots, how many of them are there in the city of Kirkland, and then how many of them in the city of Houghton, or in the Houghton jurisdiction?
I have that tally here somewhere, right? Paul is finding that.
If it was in the materials, I didn't see it. I apologize.
No, it may not be accurate.
Right. This was asked by the Planning Commission a while back. About 500 in Kirkland total. North Juanita has 207. That's in a planned unit development, so it's not affected that much. Norkirk, where this really came up as an issue, has 150. And, of course, the Lakeview Terrace, I think, has the bulk of it in Houghton, and that's probably around 100 or so.
That might be all of it. You know,
yeah.
That pocket just south of Lakeview.
Right. Yes, I think that's true. It is. That's the only one in Houghton that would be affected by that.
Was there ever any consideration? You know, Nancy or Betsy brought up an interesting point that I hadn't even thought about, and that is if somebody buys two adjacent lots and then effectively they're getting the benefit of having the bigger percentage on the small lot mm-hmm. size, but, you know, if it was a 10,000 square foot lot, then it would have the lower percentage. Was there any consideration given to, you know, in a situation where you're combining two lots, you then have to meet the larger lot requirement size?
Explored that.
I haven't really talked about that, right?
No. I'm just, you know, because I could see those kind of situations being things that get people upset.
Yeah.
You know, maybe it's a simpler way to address that issue. I don't know. Just a thought. Let's see. I guess this is not for staff. So anybody else have any questions of staff? Okay. I guess it's we have two things. At this point, we're just making a recommendation to the Planning Commission as to, you know, either we can say yeah, we would recommend approving this and adopting it. There's two issues really: adopting it for Houghton, FARs in general, and then adopting some or all of these specific changes, and if so, which ones would you recommend? And so that, we've got quite a bit to be discussing here. And since I wasn't around at the time that we had the first go-around on the FARs, I'd like the perspective of those of you who were. How do these, you know, we voted not to approve the FARs the first time around. Do these changes address your reasons for not adopting them the first time?
Well, I think the first time around, it was a package deal. It was FARs and other additional regulations. And we had to vote yes or no. And there were some of the other regulations, like the garage doors in the front, won't be able to be a certain percentage of the width of the house. Things like that we felt was onerous on the people in Houghton. So we didn't specifically vote down FAR, but we voted down the package.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
No, I think we did vote it down more specifically for FARs than any other reason, because we saw that, again, it didn't address the bulk and the mass, and it's a property rights thing. It's people who spend a lot of money for these properties. They're spending twice as much now as they were back when we vetoed it. And it's still the same issue. It's property rights and people buying lots, and you're going to tell them that they're restricted and all those kinds of reasons, from my recollection.
Well, I'm going to just agree with Bill a little bit on the property rights. I think the public and the better good does have a factor into it, and I'm not bothered by the property rights thing. I was bothered by the fact that it didn't do anything. It didn't solve the problem.
Well, that's what I wanted to. That's what I was wondering. I mean, when you go around, you know, we've had like this little experiment going on. You know, Kirkland's had the FAR, Houghton hasn't had the FAR. Are we seeing any noticeable differences in the houses that are being built? And I don't know how to answer that question. I've been driving around Houghton a lot lately, and, you know, there's differences of opinion. I mean, we all agree with that. But I think a lot of the houses that are being built look pretty good. I mean, they're a lot bigger than the houses that were there before. Now, there is a certain house that has gone in, and I looked it up on the permits thing, and its lot size is 9,700 square feet, and the house is 7,600 feet.
Yeah, and if you were to apply the FAR, the current FAR rules to that, the lowest level of that house would not be counted because it's basement that's not exposed by more than 6 feet.
So that house would
remainder, but the remainder would result in a 0.59 FAR. So it is bigger than would be allowed under by like 860 square.
But only by 860. So you can still get a mega house.
Yeah, a pretty good sized house.
Pretty good sized house.
That's a 50% FAR in that zone.
Yeah. Yeah, so you can
see the neighborhood of small houses.
Yeah, so I mean, even in 50% FAR, and sometimes I almost feel like the FAR encourages people to push
them. Well, part of it is siting. I mean, that particular house on a corner lot, and it's an L shape, so that's what you're seeing from the street, and the open space is behind it, which you don't see from the street. So.
Yeah. Yeah, so, but aside from that house, there are some other people who have been very respectful of their neighbors, and I think that addresses what some of these other people talked about, is how do we be good neighbors? You know, how do you force people to be good neighbors? I don't want to force somebody to live in a house as small as I do.
I mean, I have the perfect experiment for floor area ratios compared rest of the city to Houghton, because this buyer came into the house next door to mine, tore down the house, late 50s, 1,300 square foot rambler, and is putting in, it's almost finished, this mega house that goes out to all the setbacks. And it ends up, it's about a 9,600 square foot lot. The house size is 4,800 square feet. I looked at the building plans. And he's getting credit for having the driveway in the backyard, which I don't understand why he gets credit for that. It doesn't add any value, as far as I'm concerned, as a next-door neighbor, because it's just going to be more noise for me at my bedroom window. And
it helps with impervious surface, right?
He's out to all the side. Even the backyard setback. He doesn't have any backyard. It goes up 5 feet from his very backyard. And he's only 4,800 square feet at a 9,600, so he's 50%. So he, FAR wouldn't even help me there.
Yeah.
And I think the fact that it was Houghton, he wasn't allowed, he didn't get any credit for putting in a porch in the front yard. So I think he could have gotten more area there if FARs and those regulations were in effect. So, you know, we're trying to engineer the problem the wrong way, I think, with these FARs. I think, you know, one of the speakers mentioned tweaking the setbacks. That's the only way I can see of reducing the mass and the proximity, because I have another new house on the other side of me who's gone right to the side yard setback. And I even questioned the setback and asked the city to go measure it, and they're telling me it's good, but I still think it's too close.
Well, it can be 5 feet, and then you can go out the 18
Yeah, because he's going to have the eaves
go
going out.
18 inches,
yeah.
And then you have...
Right. So I think the setbacks are the right answer, and I think that's where we need to go work. These FARs, you know, you can tweak the formulas and more power to you for the rest of the city, but I don't think they're helping Houghton. I don't want to see FARs come to Houghton at this point.
Well, I think that what I'm remembering, Hugh, from that original go-round was that, and I think it was Dan Turner who was arguing the point, that these FARs of 50% are not going to address this issue of mega houses. Okay. You know, you're still going to get these huge houses.
I went around and picked out some of the houses that were considered the worst examples at the time.
And they fit in the FAR.
And they fit the FAR.
Yeah.
So the FAR is not doing the job.
No, I don't think the FAR is doing the job either. I agree. I think setbacks and stuff. But FAR, it doesn't seem to be addressing the problem. That's why we're here.
We could tweak the formulas all we want, but all we're doing is messing with these people that are buying these properties. And we keep changing the hurdle. You know, it's a new boundary now. Okay, now you got to do this, now you got to do that. These people are spending... These people have spent over $500,000 to buy lots next to mine for teardowns. And, you know, I guess I don't blame them for wanting to put in the big house, but, you know, let's do this some kind of logical, reasonable way. I don't think the FARs do that.
Any other?
You can do it.
I only had one comment. One of the speakers commented on having these big houses blocking their views in sunlight, which... My thought on that is, well, then why are we encouraging all the trees? Because the trees are going to do more to block the views in sunlight than any houses are. So, just, you know where I stand on that one. At any rate, that's it. So, is there a sense that we really aren't going to accomplish anything by adopting these FARs?
That's my sense.
That's my sense. But I want clarification. If Houghton chooses not to accept the FARs, then we don't also get to give feedback on the rest of the city's FAR regs, right? That wouldn't be very nice.
I don't know that you can't. I mean, there's a couple things you can do tonight. One is you can say, it's sounding like there's kind of a consensus here. You're not real wild about the FAR deal. So you can pass on that message and say, you know, here's our opinion. here's some input, take it or leave it. I mean, you're citizens of the city like anybody else is. You can, and whether or not you do that, you can either give us clear direction that we, meaning Houghton, really does not want to address this. We're at this point, we know we're not interested. Don't come back to us with the final ordinance. Just keep it written, not apply to Houghton. And we can do that and save you another meeting, if you're that sure. If you want to leave your options open, you can say, well, here's our input. You know, we're not wild about it. Here are our concerns, and you'd have one final chance, you know, at the end of the loop, like you always do with a citywide ordinance.
I think that's the better approach.
What's that here?
Stay in the loop, but tell them what we think. Maybe suggest looking at something like volume, something other than FAR to control it.
But or setbacks, as
Bill brought up.
You know, that. But basically, I'm sensing that we're not feeling any differently about it now than we did when it first came up.
But if something comes up by magic, why, we ought to look at it.
Are they going to, I mean, is it realistic to think that the city council would be looking at anything other than what's in this packet?
Well, they can't go too far beyond it.
Yeah.
Because we've done CEPA review and we've done public noticing
yeah.
and public hearings on
yeah.
certain things, and if something new gets introduced,
yeah,
like
so
let's you know yeah. increase side yard setbacks to 10 feet each side, they can't. That's a whole new process.
Yeah.
They probably have to hold their own public hearing.
Yeah. So I would think
probably.
That we don't if we don't want to do FARs, then we don't need to see this again because we're
it's just wasting everybody's
it's
time.
It's wasting everybody's time because they're not going
to
add anything new.
Come up with something.
But they can't.
They're saying that it's
they can't because they'd have to have a whole new public hearing.
They're going to tweak the percentages, and that doesn't help our problem yeah. or our problem with the FARs. Yeah.
It's yeah. just the system that we're complaining about.
Yeah, but I mean, it could be that the city might say, you know, this volume idea is a great idea. Let's table this.
For future time.
Here, you know, and then start well, starting
that,
the process, and then
it
we
would
see
process.
It.
Yeah.
That's what would happen. I think if there's a new approach to addressing house size, I mean, some completely different thing, then
yeah.
that's a new project.
That's a whole new thing. So then we would like to be right. involved.
Yeah, the when this process started, the bundle of options was greater than what's being focused on in this staff report. And that bundle has been being whittled with the help of the Planning Commission. It's possible that the council could go back and look at some of those things that were in the original list and say, well, you know, Planning Commission didn't recommend this and Community Council didn't, but we're interested in this, which may have more hearing implications or process implications. But beyond, you know, beyond a point, it's just not, it's not the same project that we've been dealing with.
Well, to move this along, I would entertain a motion that we are not interested in continuing in the FARs, but if there's a significant change that result in a completely new hearing process, and as we've discussed, then at that point, make us aware of it, and we'll consider it at that time.
That's I think I'd want that to also say that it addresses impervious surface and setbacks. You know, I give
that,
them
that
focus
sure.
them on a direction to go.
On that.
We're going to get the same thing.
Yeah.
That's fine with me, David. So
yeah.
Somebody want to put that in form of a motion?
So moved.
Let's clarify it for the sake of staff and the recorder here.
Second.
Dave, do you want to put that in this in form of
I'll do my best. I'd like to make a motion that we officially withdraw our consideration of the floor area ratio plan that's presented to us tonight, file ZON05-0019, and suggest that the council look into addressing future setbacks and impervious surfaces to help remedy our situation in the Houghton neighborhood.
Is there a second?
Second.
Yeah.
Okay. I did that. That was good.
That was good.
That was good.
Been moved and seconded. Is there any more discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
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 Motion carries unanimously. Thank you, Michael. We enjoy your work. Okay. Maybe we'll see you another time on this issue.
I'm sure he enjoys that.
Okay. With that, is there any other unfinished business that's on the agenda, but I'm not aware of it? I guess not. And let's go to new business.
Let's go on.
That's the 2006 comp plan, and then, oh, sorry. Oh, okay. Break? Somebody need a break? Okay, we'll take a 5-minute break and be back here promptly at 8:15 to wrap up this meeting.
Well, we still have hot comp plan amendments.
We do. That's we're going to take care of that, but we need a quick break.
Okay.
Somebody does.
Here's that exhibit that they presented during here.
Okay.
Well, that's what was introduced.
Better get moving if you need the break.
He's just a taskmaster.
Well, Dave set a goal for this meeting, and I'm doing my best to meet it.
What's the goal? To get out of here by?
Yes. Yes.
Okay. If we get out of here by 9, you'll buy all the drinks for everybody. And if you're going along,
Damn. Come on.
You're going away, party.
Come on.
I can go now. Can I be excused?
We want to go warm up the seat.
Just FYI, ask Paul if our housing targets have included demolition permits or not.
Oh, that's a...
you know that cities under investigation by WAR had to go to the Growth Management Hearings Board for its inability to meet its housing goals.
Well, are we the only ones?
WAR is Washington Association.
Yeah, I understand. But yeah, is the city of Kirkland the only one?
Most out of compliance, the city of Kirkland.
Now, of all of the cities?
Of all the cities. I mean, Rick, I'm getting this back from WAR because the city is not reporting a demolition to the all the units.
Oh, so if something's taken out of the supply, that's not deducted. Correct. They're just taking the...
True story.
Ooh.
Ask your planners about
that. Is this your last...
Your building department, of course, keeps that room.
No, I'll be here for the next 3 minutes.
Okay.
I'm gone. I'm leaving Friday for Montana.
All right.
Yeah.
Good.
Yeah, no, it's not good.
No?
No. Because my wife told me we have to go. Her family still has the original homestead. And so it's you go to Great Falls, and then you go 20 miles from Great Falls to the beautiful downtown city of Belt, Little Belt Mountains, which is about 4 bars and 1 grocery store, and that's actually a gas station grocery store.
That sounds like a place I could live.
And then you go 12 miles on a gravel road that's a little bit wider than a single lane, and you get to the ranch house.
On a break, yeah. It's off the record, yeah.
For a while. And everybody wants to go have a beer, so we drive 12 miles back on the gravel road. You have a few beers, and then you turn around and drive back to the ranch.
Somebody who's got a good hand on their shoulders. It's nice to you. The longer you've been involved, the longer you've been in the community and the more involved you are, I think that helps.
But they have one section.
See, that's a plus, I think.
On property, my husband's family has been there since before you were born.
Pretty
good. That sounds pretty good.
Pardon me?
You don't know how old he is.
Yeah. Yeah, you should.
I've worked in the school district. I know all the kids in the Houghton community. Is, let's see, Alex, your son?
Yes.
See?
Uh-oh. That's dangerous. Okay. Well, yeah.
Okay. So where do you find information on how to apply?
City Hall has applications, or you can download it off the website.
Houghton's website?
Yeah.
Kirkland website. Oh.
Yeah, there is no Houghton website.
Houghton Association.
Yeah, within the city of Kirkland.
Yeah.
Okay. So, yeah,
I'll
do it.
Yeah.
Please do.
All right.
You, huh?
Thanks. All right.
Thank you.
We
got rid of the
exclusions. And you really had an FAR that was going to stick more than 50%. Would that have satisfied? Well, it didn't satisfy you back then. You think it wouldn't satisfy you now? No, because 50% of a minimal change.
I mean, you can play with the numbers, but it's messing with people that are trying to build houses, and it's just
without accomplishing anything. Jim,
yeah,
is the problem. If it was really accomplishing something, like either the volume thing or the setback thing,
impervious surface.
So now, how do we try to make it work a little better? Because it's much bigger than it was intended to do. I mean, initially, it wasn't intended to give us FARs with 60% and 70%.
At a minimum, if FAR is even worse, you know something, you know, even at a minimum, you guys should have at least considered taking, if you've got adjacent lots that are 5,000, so you got one house on a 10,000, why in the world wouldn't you at least make that a 50%? It just, to me, that's common sense.
Yeah, and say, you know, if there's aggregation that this doesn't count, we could still do that.
Well,
that was a good suggestion.
Yeah.
We could build two houses and put like a little bridge between them.
Okay, we need to get moving.
I've got a million ideas like that.
What? Oh, no, I just wanted to say I was at your hearing.
Oh,
wasn't
that?
Okay.
I heard that was fun.
All right, meeting is called back to order. And we are now going into a discussion of the 2006 comp plan amendments. Paul?
You want a staff report?
Yeah, not quit that. Yes, we do want to
see. See, that's what happens when you act that way.
You hurt his feelings.
I'll be very brief.
Okay.
As you know, every year we have a bundle of miscellaneous comp plan amendments we take forward, and this year we have a number of things. Nothing too critical overall. There may be some issues dealing with level of service that the Transportation Commission is looking at. For the most part, we do want to update our capital improvement program, and of course that then follows with our capital facilities element to make sure they're consistent with the projects and the funding and so forth. We have some citywide map changes we want to take on this year. We have a couple new park acquisitions, one in Yarra Bay that the city has acquired down there, so Wetlands area. We have a couple of boundary changes to incorporate Nunn and Houghton, one up in Juanita. Actually, they're both up in Juanita. One is more of a right-of-way issue. Another one's an incorporation that we did, not incorporation, but an annexation we did just a couple months ago with a small subdivision on the west side of the Juanita neighborhood. We have some maps regarding the city fiber optic installation areas, and then some utility service maps. So those are pretty fairly minor corrections that we need to do to incorporate into the comp plan. We also have a new bill that was passed in the legislature, Senate Bill 5186, that calls for promoting physical activity and healthy lifestyles. It has some language there that we are required to look at and put some text in our comp plan to comply with that. I don't think it's too onerous. It's more of a statement of intent. Mm-hmm. And to encourage those types of activities to happen. And then some minor edits to our human services element that we've received from our Parks Department. And as I mentioned earlier, there may be some changes to our LOS, although what I heard just today is, and the Transportation Commission is talking about this tomorrow night, it may be more of an issue next year with the idea of coming up with perhaps a revised approach that would be more multimodal, or look at a way to get beyond this every year trying to update our standards so that we are kind of have a moving target. So anyway, those are the things that are coming down the road. We intend to have this adopted by the end of the year by the City Council, and then, of course, back to you after that. I don't think there's anything really substantive other than the fact that it depends on what happens with the LOS and concurrency. But for the most part, these are some housekeeping efforts, maybe a couple of policy questions regarding some elements, and then depending on the extent of the LOS, that may be more substantive. There are no private amendment requests in Houghton this year, so that's not before you. So
okay.
Basically it.
Cool. Any questions or comments from council?
Anything you think you want to look at yourself, or something you want to raise as an issue that we should address in the comp plan update?
Any problems that we have
big houses
heard about? Okay.
We talk about FARs again.
I guess hearing none, Paul. Let's go with what you come up with, and sure. We'll do our best to work with you on them this time around. And then next is administrative reports and community council discussion on emergency preparedness. Paul, is this your show too?
Not really. I think that was something you asked for some information on. I think that was provided in your packet. So
yeah, thank you. This was for my neighbors.
Okay. Any council members that want to have any discussion on this, or is it pretty self-explanatory what we've been provided?
It looks like pretty useful information.
So. Yeah, I she was particularly concerned about bird flu, but I don't know if the city can do anything about bird flu.
Especially now they're keeping all the trees.
That's right. So
the thing about that is, you know, there's certain government. You know, you can't address every problem at the city level. I mean, mm-hmm. bird flu is something that's better handled on a larger, either county or state or national mm-hmm. level. I would think. It's like
yeah.
declaring ourselves a nuclear-free zone or something. You know,
yeah.
it's just.
I think there's an interest in invading the Canary Islands because of that.
What did you say?
Don't pay no attention to the man behind the podium over there.
Strike that comment from staff. Okay. Well, the only other question, if people want to, if I run into neighbors that are asking me about the emergency preparedness, just send them to the city website for the information.
Or Robin Pastor.
Mm-hmm. Pardon?
Robin Pastor.
Okay.
Noted there on the memo.
That's the person. Okay.
Is this pointed out on the city's website, this information?
You know, I don't know that, Bill.
I think that would be a recommendation I would make is to maybe not have all the information on the website, but point out that this information is available and just point them in that direction.
Mm-hmm. Good point.
Okay. With that,
we adjourn.
Second.
It's been moved and seconded that we adjourn. All in favor?
Aye.
Meeting is adjourned.
I think Jim's opposed.
Jim.